Ever imagine a 24-year marriage, but it ends with like a $47 million question?
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So how would you split all the assets, especially when one person in the marriage has been maybe a little too generous with joint money?
Sounds messy.
Oh, it is. And it actually happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this, the fascinating case of Kogod v. Shafi Kogod.
Okay.
This case really kind of shook up divorce law in Nevada and has some lessons for anyone who is, you know, interested in how love, money, and law all intersect.
Yeah. So this isn't just any who gets the house divorce. You know, Kogod v. Shafi Kogod really dives deep into some complex legal concepts, alimony, without, you know, needing the money and what even counts as like getting rid of assets when you're dealing with a couple that has, you know, really expensive taste.
Yeah.
So are you ready to unpack all this?
Absolutely. Let's get into it.
Great. So to start off, let's set the scene. We've got Dennis and Gabrielle Kogod. They're married 24 years. Dennis is a high earner, works in healthcare, travels a ton, makes big deals. You know the type. I gotcha.
Gabrielle worked part-time as a nurse consultant.
Okay.
So on the surface, it might seem like a pretty normal setup.
Yeah.
But behind the scenes, things were not so picture perfect.
Right, right. So there were some serious allegations about Dennis. Apparently, he had multiple affairs and even like a whole other secret family.
Oh, wow.
And on top of that, his spending was out of control, even for someone as wealthy as he was. Lavish gifts, crazy trips, the whole nine yards.
Sounds like a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
So what happened when this went to court?
Well, the district court rulings were pretty shocking. Gabrielle was awarded $15,000 a month in alimony, even though the court didn't actually find that she had any financial need.
Oh, wow.
On top of that, she got a 60-40 split of the assets, which is pretty favorable. And to top it off, Dennis got hit with sanctions for violating spending rules during the whole divorce process.
$15,000 a month without proving financial need?
Yeah.
I can already see why this is considered a landmark decision.
Absolutely. It really changed how everyone thinks about alimony. It also raised some big questions about what's considered wasteful spending, especially for couples who live a certain lifestyle.
Right.
Like, if you buy a Porsche, does that automatically mean you're hiding money from your ex?
Right.
These are the things that the Nevada Supreme Court had to figure out when Dennis appealed the district court decision.
Okay, so let's talk about the Nevada Supreme Court. What were some of the big questions they focused on?
So the court honed in on four major issues. First, they tackled the whole concept of alimony without need. You know, can someone get alimony if they're already going to receive millions?
Right.
The majority of the justices agreed that the concept itself was valid, but they didn't think it applied in this case.
So they were basically saying, yeah, alimony without need can exist, but this wasn't the right situation for it.
Exactly. But here's where it gets really interesting. Some of the justices agreed with the outcome, but for totally different reasons.
Oh.
They said the district court was right to use something called compensatory alimony.
Compensatory alimony. I'm not familiar with that. What is it?
Well, it's the idea that alimony is not just about, like, covering your basic living expenses. Uh-huh. It can also address, you know, any economic disadvantages a spouse might have experienced during the marriage.
Okay.
So, for instance, if someone put their career on hold to raise the kids, that might be a factor in the alimony.
So, in this case, are they saying, Gabrielle, she faced, like, economic disadvantages during the marriage that made alimony justified, even if she didn't technically need it?
Exactly. And this all ties back to a really big case in Nevada, Scheidler v. Scheidler.
Okay.
It's basically like the foundation of how Nevada handles alimony.
Okay, so what's so important about Scheidler?
Scheidler established that alimony can be used for both support and compensation. You know, it can address financial need, A&E, compensate for sacrifices made during the marriage. It set the stage for how courts in Nevada look at alimony. And in Kogod, the question was whether the district court had used the Scheidler framework correctly.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
So how did the Supreme Court ultimately rule on the whole alimony issue?
Well, the majority opinion really hammered home that property division should be like the main way to make things fair in a divorce.
Okay.
Alimony, they said, should be secondary. They pointed out that Gabrielle was set to receive around $24 million from the marital estate.
Wow.
So they believed that would generate more than enough income for her to live her life without needing alimony from Dennis.
So basically she's getting millions, she'll be fine.
Yeah, pretty much. But the dissenting justices, they saw it differently.
Okay.
They said even with her share of the assets, Gabrielle would still have way less income than Dennis after the divorce. Like, about a 30% difference in their projected income.
Wow.
So they felt the district court was right to use compensatory alimony to fix that difference and that the majority was wrong to overturn that decision.
It's like there's this tension between wanting a clean break in a divorce through just splitting things up and then recognizing that sometimes you need ongoing payments like alimony to actually make things fair.
Yeah, you got it. And that's just one of the fascinating things about this whole case.
So you've got this like clash between wanting that clean financial break, but also recognizing like the need for ongoing support. What does this all mean for, you know, for lawyers and people going through a high asset divorce? Like, what are the real world implications of this?
Yeah, well, the majority opinion in this case, it really sent a message to lawyers. Show me the math.
Okay.
If you're going to try to argue for alimony, especially this kind of compensatory alimony, you've got to have a really strong case. You need to be able to clearly connect that request to specific financial losses that your client experienced during the marriage.
Okay.
You can't just say, oh, it's unfair.
Right.
You got to show the numbers.
It sounds like it's a lot harder now to prove the need for alimony.
Oh, absolutely. This case also just highlights how important it is to have really good financial experts, you know, people who can really analyze the finances and present a compelling argument.
Right. That makes total sense. So we've talked about alimony, but what about that other really big part of the case, the ruling that spending on affairs is automatically considered bad for a couple's finances? What impact did that have?
Oh, that part of the Supreme Court ruling was a huge deal for divorce cases where infidelity and financial wrongdoing are part of the picture.
Right.
So basically they said that spending on an affair is automatically considered dissipation of assets.
Okay.
So you don't have to prove anymore that the spending only benefited the person who was cheating.
Wow, that's a pretty strong stance. So if one spouse spends money on an affair, it's just assumed to be damaging to their shared finances.
That's right. Before Kogod, it was a lot harder to prove dissipation based on an affair. You had to show that the spending only personally benefited only the cheating spouse. That was really hard to do.
So Kogod really simplified that.
Yeah, it did. And this brings us to another important part of the case, how the court actually defines wasteful spending, you know, especially in a divorce where there's a lot of money involved.
Right.
They made a really important distinction between spending on a fancy lifestyle, you know, things like expensive dinners and vacations, and actual dissipation of assets.
Okay, so just because you like nice things doesn't automatically mean you're doing something wrong financially.
That's right. The court basically said that judges can't just say a Porsche is wasteful just because it's a Porsche.
Right.
They have to look at the big picture and see if that specific purchase really hurt the couple's overall financial situation.
It's all about context. So what about the Porsche in this case? Was Dennis found guilty of dissipation because of that?
Actually, no. The court ended up overturning $1.3 million in findings against Dennis that were related to his everyday spending, things like travel expenses and, yes, even that Porsche. They said there wasn't enough proof that those purchases actually damaged the couple's finances in the long run.
So it wasn't about the thing itself, but more like the impact on their overall money situation.
Yeah.
That's interesting. But this part of the ruling is still important for other couples who have a lot of money and are getting divorced, right?
Oh, for sure. It sets a precedent. Courts can't just make assumptions about spending without considering the whole financial picture.
Right.
And it shows how important it is to have solid evidence if you're going to claim dissipation.
This is super important for anyone dealing with a divorce where, you know, wasting money is a factor. Mm-hmm. How did the Supreme Court define what makes someone cross the line from just living a luxurious life to actually, like, wasting assets?
Well, they created three main tests that have to be used when you're trying to figure out if someone has been dissipating assets.
Okay.
So these tests give us a framework to analyze spending that might be questionable.
So break those down for us. What are the three tests?
The first one is called the adversity test. This one focuses on whether the spending actually hurt the couple's financial stability. You know, like, did it drain resources they needed for their well-being?
Okay. So going back to that Porsche example, would that have passed the adversity test?
Well, it depends. If the couple was already having money problems and buying the Porsche made things worse, then yeah, that could be considered dissipation. But if they were really wealthy and the Porsche didn't really affect their overall finances, then it would probably just be seen as part of their normal lifestyle.
Got it. So context, context, context.
Right.
What's the second test?
All right. The second one's called the temporal analysis.
Okay.
This is where the court looks at when the spending happened. Like, was it before or after the couple separated or filed for divorce?
Oh, okay. So if someone goes on a huge spending spree right after they move out, that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Spending that happens before the separation is looked at much more closely. The court wants to see if it was really harmful or just someone, you know, blowing off steam during a tough time. But spending after the divorce papers are filed, that's usually assumed to be harmful, especially if there's an order in place saying they shouldn't be doing that.
That makes sense. Okay, so what about the third test? What's that one?
The third one is the wealth context test. This is where things get interesting, especially for couples with a lot of money. The court said you can't just look at how much money was spent and cry dissipation.
Okay.
You have to compare that spending to how the couple usually lived and spent money during their marriage.
So what might seem super lavish for one couple could be totally normal for another one, depending on their wealth and how they usually spend.
Exactly. If a couple is used to flying first class and staying in fancy hotels, then a $10,000 vacation might not be a big deal. But for a couple who usually goes camping and drives a used car, that same trip would look really suspicious, and it might be a problem.
So if you want to avoid someone saying you wasted money, make sure how you're spending matches your overall financial situation and your normal lifestyle.
Right. And document everything.
Okay.
The court in Kogod said they wouldn't accept someone just saying their spending was normal without showing proof of what their spending was like during the marriage.
Documentation is key. So what other important takeaways from Kogod should, you know, lawyers and people going through a divorce keep in mind?
Well, here are a few big ones. First, when it comes to alimony, you got to be ready to show a clear argument, you know, with data that connects any alimony payments to specific financial disadvantages your client experienced during the marriage. Second, if you're dealing with dissipation, you need to be ready to use those three tests, adversity, temporal, and wealth context, and present good evidence to support your claims.
So basically, do your research and don't just make vague accusations.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And lastly, remember that Kogod was about Nevada law specifically. But the reasoning and principles in this case have really had an impact on the legal world all over the country. Courts in other states are paying attention and might use similar logic when they're dealing with alimony and dissipation claims, especially in these divorces where there's a lot of money at stake.
So Kogod is like a roadmap for how to handle these complicated financial issues in divorce cases.
I think that's a good way to put it. It reminds us that the law is always changing, and lawyers and judges have to stay up to date to make sure things are fair for everyone involved.
Oh, well said. We've covered so much today. We talked about alimony, asset dissipation, those three tests for figuring out if someone wasted money,
yeah,
and how important it is to document everything. Anything else we should hit before we wrap up this deep dive?
Yeah, there's one more interesting aspect of Kogod that we haven't talked about yet.
Okay.
It has to do with some unintended consequences this ruling could have for people who earn a lot of money and how they spend during their marriage.
Unintended consequences for high earners. That sounds kind of serious. What are we talking about here? Unintended consequences for high earners. That sounds kind of serious. What are we talking about here?
Well, think about it. If someone knows that, you know, anything they spend during their marriage, especially on like luxury items or things that aren't essential, if they know that could be looked at really closely and maybe even used against them in a divorce, how do you think that would change how they act?
Yeah, that's a good point. They might be less likely to, you know, enjoy their wealth just out of fear of what could happen if things go south.
Exactly. Exactly. And so it brings up a big question. Does Kogod, you know, does this case make people less likely to spend money?
Mm-hmm.
Especially people who make a lot of money. Could this discourage them from investing in things like vacations or fancy cars or even giving to charity because they're worried about what might happen down the line if they get divorced?
That's a really interesting point. It's almost like a weird side effect of a rule that's meant to protect people from financial harm.
Mm-hmm.
It could actually limit people's financial freedom while they're still married.
Yeah, yeah. It's something that lawyers and financial advisors and anyone who works with clients who have a lot of money, they should really think about this.
Right.
Like, how do you advise your clients about financial planning and spending habits given, you know, these potential consequences?
Yeah, it definitely makes things more complicated. So what do you think? Does Kogod set a dangerous precedent here?
That's a tough one. The court definitely wanted to address a real problem, you know, protecting spouses from getting hurt financially when a marriage ends. And the principles they laid out, they make sense. But we have to be aware of those possible unintended consequences, especially in divorces where a lot of money is involved, and the line between just living a certain lifestyle and actually wasting assets can be a little blurry.
This case is fascinating because it's not just about splitting stuff up in a divorce. It makes us think about how we view wealth and spending and financial responsibility within a marriage.
For sure. For sure. And it really shows how important it is to be open and honest about money throughout a marriage. Being transparent about finances can help prevent those spending habits from becoming a big problem during a divorce.
That's great advice. So we've really dug deep into Kogod v. Shafik Kogod. We cover the facts, the Supreme Court rulings, the impact on alimony and dissipation, and even those potential unintended consequences of this really important decision.
Yeah, it was a complex case, but I think we did a good job explaining the key takeaways. Hopefully our listeners, you know, feel a little more prepared to navigate the world of divorce law, especially when there's a lot of money involved, whether they're going through it themselves or helping clients who are.
You know, if there's one thing to take away from this deep dive, it's that the details really matter, especially when you're dealing with a lot of assets in a divorce. Document everything, get advice from experts, and make sure you understand the law and how it applies to your specific situation.
Well said. And remember, talking openly about money is crucial for a healthy and successful marriage.
Couldn't agree more. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive. Until next time, stay informed and stay curious.